few weeks ago, I was talking with a client and a friend, and we were talking about, you know, how can you get more leads coming in on the front end? And they were already doing pretty darn good. So what we started to do was look at, I said, where else in the process can we actually tweak and improve to give you a lift in your revenue and deals? Okay. Because there's a lot of different ways to grow a business. It's not just to get more leads in on the front end. You can also grow a business by tightening up the processes after the lead comes in, on the follow-up, on the setting expectations, on the phone call, on the meeting, that kind of thing, to really pull levers at each and every point where people can fall off. So what I want to be doing today on this episode of the Carrot Cast, I invited a guest on named John Martinez. And John is he is the leading sales trainer in the real estate investing industry. And I had a chance to meet him in person, finally, after following him for quite some time, down in Dallas at a mastermind, at the Investor Fuel Mastermind that we're a part of. And John blew me away at his presentation down there, and I really love kind of the role playing that he did up on stage, talking through the way that high achieving and high performing real estate investors negotiate and discuss the transaction with sellers. So what we're going to do is you're going to learn a lot about John's story, but then about 10, 15 minutes in, we're going to dive in knee deep on role playing and basically walking you through every step of the way, all the way from hopping on the call to meeting the seller in person first, what you say, how you prepare them, how you set expectations, exactly word for word what to say. This stuff is pretty darn amazing. Now, the cool thing about this is this call isn't just, hey, jot this script down, because that's not it at all. What John teaches you is the fundamentals behind why these work. So now you can be empowered to go out there as someone who understands psychology and understands how to actually really truly serve your sellers and your prospects. All right. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome in John Martinez into this episode of the Carrot Cast. And what I would love for you to do is, if you get any nugget out of this episode, push pause, head over to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast and give us a rating and review. Okay. That would be amazing. We look and read every single rating and review in iTunes and everywhere else. And it pumps us up, but also lets us know how we're doing. All right. So I'm going to introduce you to John Martinez, and I want you to completely shift and transcend your current mindset on how you're currently talking with sellers. Hey, everybody, this is Trevor with Carrot coming at you with another episode of the Carrot Cast. And we've talked about masterminds before. There was, I don't remember which episode it was of the Carrot Cast. It was probably episode 30 or something like that, where I did an episode on masterminds. And I know I meet, number one, I meet some of my best friends and business partners from masterminds, straight up. Two of my three businesses I've started in the past 10 years, I've met those people at masterminds. And also just people I've gotten to know really well over the years. And masterminds are always such an amazing place to do it. So I'm a part of a mastermind called Investor Fuel with a bunch of amazing real estate investors and people that are experts in the real estate space. And I met our guest today, and I'll introduce you to John here in a second. But I'd heard a lot of things about John before getting to meet him in person. It's all amazing stuff. It was like a bunch of our clients who were going through John's sales stuff or going to his boot camps, and they kept on saying, man, I'm using this service of his, or I went to this training, and they up-leveled the way that they talk to sellers and buyers and the way that they communicate. And so I was pumped to be able to meet John Martinez down at the Investor Fuel Mastermind. We got to talking. I'm like, dude, I'd love to have you on the Carrot Cast and tell your story and break down some of the stuff that you're talking with investors or anyone, doesn't matter what business, it's all psychology stuff, what you're doing. So I want to officially welcome John Martinez on the Carrot Cast. Welcome aboard, man.
Hey, man, I'm pumped to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Dude, I appreciate it. So we'll kind of dive into a little bit of who you are, you know, where you are in your life and business right now here in a second. But, man, like I said, I'm really pumped to have you on. And sales is something I was talking with Brian Rockwell, one of our clients, right before this call. And he's down in Dallas, actually. His first year in business was last year. And he crushed it. Like, the numbers he pulled in his first year in business are not normal, okay? He did about 700K in wholesale deals his first year, all online. None of his deals came from anywhere else except for through Carrot. And when I asked him what he's going to be focusing on this year to gain an edge, he goes, man, I need to get better at sales and negotiation, and I really want to buckle down on those techniques. And that's something that in a cluttered market like right now, every lever point we can get really adds that advantage. So we'll dive into that today, but let's start with who you are, what is your business, what do you do,
And let's kind of talk about where you came from.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'll just tell a story about where I came from and then what I do now. So I've been in sales my whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, started telemarketing as a probably 16 years old, selling over the phone. My first probably real sales gig I'd consider was selling insurance, all commission. Did that for a number of years. Ended up opening up my own insurance agency in St. Louis, Missouri, close to where I was living. Built a 50-person agency. We did about $250,000 a week in new business. And then parlayed that kind of up the food chain, if you will. So into corporate America, a lot of high-tech stuff, software, that type of thing. Growing sales teams, recruiting, training, coaching, into some higher level positions like VP of sales, director of sales and marketing for some larger players. Mm-hmm. So, that was kind of my journey, and that, you know, didn't take long for me to go through, but that was about a 15 or so year journey, that encapsulated that. Last 4 years though, it's been strictly sales training and strictly in the real estate investment space. So, doing nothing but helping people take the leads that they're producing and try to get them to a point where they can convert every lead that is convertible, that is closable into a deal.
Dude, so we're going to dive into a lot of those techniques and possibly even like do a little bit of role playing stuff later on, because when you were doing your talk at the mastermind, just the questions that some of the really high level investors were asking, I'm like, oh man, the way he said that and explained it and the psychology behind it's so good. I want to get him on here. And we will dive into that. So everyone that wants some of that, keep listening in. But what I want to dig into first is kind of a little bit more about kind of some psychology stuff on you as an entrepreneur. And also one thing that popped up was you, man, what were the words that you used? I can't remember what it was, but you're a pretty simple guy. Like, you don't need a ton of things. I think it was either you or someone else at the mastermind that said, I've only got a few pairs of jeans. And I don't need like a bunch of different things. When one wears out, I just replace it. Yeah. And the reason I want to bring this up is because I know for me, as you know, I've been growing my businesses over the years and became more successful, I've despised things more and more and like simplified. What's your mindset around just simplification? And have you always been that way? Have you not?
No. So it's 180 from where it was. Okay. So I would say, you know, even 5-6 years ago, I was very money focused and wanted a lot of material things. And I had really big goals. I thought I needed to make just a boatload of money to get those things. But along my journey, I realized that it was pretty cool to buy some stuff, but it didn't take a lot of money at all. I mean, much less than what I thought it was going to take to hit a point where more money didn't mean more happiness or a lifestyle change or thinking any different or doing any, like zero impact whatsoever.
Totally. Yep.
So it was a very low level and hit that pretty early on. It was like, where do I go now? And what I realized for me anyways, it was about getting my time back and really having freedom to choose what I did, when I did it. And then, you know, once I got a lot of my time back, then the journey started to change. Well, the work I am doing, is it stuff that I'm really, really passionate about? So I'd say, you know, along my journey, that's just kind of changed and morphed over time.
That's cool. Dude, for anyone watching the video, there's this canvas right behind me. And every single year, you guys are probably tired of me talking about it, but every single year I pick a theme for the year and then I get a canvas and put it on my wall. And we do the same thing with our team members here at Carrot. And last year, it was this one up here. If you're watching the YouTube version of it, it was actions express priorities. And I'm like, man, I feel like I've got these goals and I've got these certain things in life that I say are important, but my actions aren't mapping to that. So I really wanted to work on it. This year, it's exactly what you talked about, dude. It's that canvas right there where it says the ultimate goal of an entrepreneur isn't money. It's complete control over your time. So, dude, what were some things you have done just in that journey to start gaining back more of your time?
Right. So first, it was very very basic. It was just changing my business model. Mm-hmm. So I went from a lot of one-on-one stuff I was doing, got into group coaching and one-to-many types of trainings. I hired people to take on the sales side of things for me, which is weird because I'm a sales trainer.
Yeah.
But I talk it and I do it all the time. So it was just something that was taking up a lot of time that I could easily, obviously, train someone to do, right? So I got rid of that. I brought on an executive assistant, and that's been a game changer for me. So he does my email and just all kinds of stuff like that now, a lot of the basic communication stuff. And then next level where I'm going over the next 2 weeks is and I haven't done this yet, so don't get me wrong. It's kind of an experiment. But last week I took social media and email off my phone. And the next 2 weeks, what I'm going to try to do is shut my laptop and just basically unplug. Not meaning that I'm going to be any less active on social media and those types of things, but just so I prioritize what I really need to do. So I'll just talk to my assistant probably once or twice a day. What are the emails? How are we going to answer them? What's coming in on social media? What questions do people have? And because today what I'm doing is questions will come into our Facebook group or stuff like that. And I'll be so busy, I'll just type a short answer. But I said, I don't want to do that. That's the value that I provide. I need to be better at that. So you tell me what comes in on Facebook and we're going to do a video to answer each one of those. So it could be a really good, solid, deep answer. So that's the next step on my journey, is shutting my laptop so I can focus on creating content, communicating with people, building relationships, because those are probably the three biggest drivers in the business and the three biggest things I enjoy doing.
Dude, so you're going to love it, first of all. And I've done variations of what you're about to do, and some of them worked great and some of them I didn't commit to well enough, and I want to redo it. But I took email off my phone a couple of years ago, so I haven't had email on my phone in a while. And email was kind of my, for anyone listening to this, email was kind of my nemesis. And I think we all have this one thing that probably sucks up more of that time than others. And email was mine, man. I'd be in it and there'd be an email coming in. I had this expectation in my mind that I had to get back to people within hours, if not minutes, right? And so over the course of the last 3 years, I went from checking email probably 20 times a day, you know, always having it up, to literally, I forget that I have email now. I check it once or twice a week. And my executive assistant, Jen, handles all that. We have a Carrot Cast episode where we talk about exactly how we did that, I think in episode 30 or something like that. But yeah, I check email once or twice a week now. And the next thing is exactly what you're mentioning, man. So I'm going to be really curious to see how the mindset shifts you make on it. It's only going to be positive stuff. That's the cool thing about it. So happy for you. So where did the real estate side come in play? Because you're in insurance, and where did the real estate side come?
It was an accident. I never went after it. I mean, I wish when I told my story, I could say, hey, I narrowed in on this niche and I went after it and I'm brilliant, but it's not how it went down. So the real story is, here where I live locally, there's a company that produces leads for real estate investors and retail real estate agents. And what they do is they produce those leads and then they cold call out and they sell the leads or territories or something like that to agents and investors. And their sales bottomed out for like 2 years. Weren't losing money, weren't making money. They're just staying afloat. So they called me in to rewrite the scripts that their people used and to do some basic sales training. So I did that, not knowing anything about this whole real estate investment space at all. Like maybe I've seen a couple of the billboards, right? And I did it, and they called one of their clients, and he was a real estate investor in Houston, Texas. And he said to the phone rep, he said, hey, listen, you guys call me all the freaking time, but this is different. What is going on out there? And he bought a package, and he ended up getting to the sales manager. And I hired the sales manager, too. That was one of the things I did to help with sales, was get the right person in there. He got to the sales manager, and the sales manager connected me with him. And he said, listen, we buy houses. And I'm like, what is this craziness? Right? He's like, I need help with sales. You're a sales guy. Come down to Houston. Help me with my team. And I did. I went down. We did 2 days of training. And he ended up, he brought up masterminds. He's in a large mastermind. And he told his buddies in the mastermind about what I did with him. So word kind of spread. And within 6 months, I was working with 40, 50 different real estate investors. And then it got to a point where it was like, that was my thing. I mean, I was so heavily invested in that space and learning so much and creating scripts and all that kind of stuff that it took over my business. And I just said, hey, the market's calling my name. It's telling me this is where you need to be. So that's how I got in. It was a complete accident, and it's been full throttle since.
Dude, isn't that cool how things like that work out, where you could have the best well-laid plan for your career or whatever it is, and then you took an opportunity that looked like it might have been a one-off project, and it turned into basically what's currently your career.
Yeah.
Dude, that's way cool. So do you see yourself in your business having any pivots in the next 3 to 5 years as the real estate market shifts? Like, are there any different parts where you know, hey, I can focus on agents, or you're going to expand out or going to hyper focus on investors for the next several?
Yeah, so we're pivoting in a few different ways. Number one, we sprung up about probably 2 years ago now, a call center. So we produce leads by cold calling different people. So that was an offshoot of the sales training. You know, I was training VAs and lead managers across the country, and then finally just said, you know what, we could probably pull this off in a group environment and then distribute the leads. So that was one offshoot, but it's still tied to real estate. So then another offshoot we're doing is I got it from real estate. So there's tons of coaches and all that kind of, you know, tons of education in this space, obviously. But there's none to become a sales trainer. So I saw that education, how to become a real estate investor. And I started thinking back about my journey when I made the decision to become a sales trainer. And as part of my journey, I looked everywhere for help. What system can I plug into? And, you know, what can I do to, you know, what franchise can I buy? What can I do to speed up this journey? There was nothing. So when I saw the real estate coaching model, I said, there's tons of great VPs of sales and people who built their careers in sales who want to own their own business. So now we just launched a program the end of last year where we basically train people to be sales trainers deep in their niche, right? Cool. People who've been in an industry for 20 years. So that's our next pivot. We are working on some stuff on the retail side, just dipping our toes in it a little bit on the inside sales thing. We're constantly looking for new avenues and where we fit in.
Cool. So the reason I want to bring that up right here is because one thing that a lot of, especially newer investors, but some experienced ones too, they'll throw out there is they think that a method or a technique or even online marketing is unique for just, let's say, real estate investing. And the way that we do online marketing is really rooted in psychology. It's the conversion methodology that we have. When someone lands there, how do you then attract and convert that person? And sales is very similar, where there's psychology principles that work for sales, whether you're selling, you know, toilets, real estate, whatever it is. So now we kind of want to make this transition and let's kind of dive into some of that sales psychology. And I don't have any questions written down. I'm going to toss some things your way that are popping up in my head, but what are the biggest common problems that you see when you're diving into someone's business and you go, man, these are the things that you can immediately pull these levers and make them better?
Right. So I think the biggest from just macro perspective is too many people are selling without thinking or buying without thinking about the sellers, right? What's going through their head? Yep. What do they want to accomplish? What are they afraid of? What's going to motivate them to take action? What's going to keep them from taking that action? Why aren't they answering your questions? Why are they scared to open? Like all those things. Most salespeople just haven't stopped and acquisition agents or investors just haven't stopped and thought about what are they thinking and feeling. Yep. And I think that's the biggest problem, right? Just like you said, the psychology of it, right? Why would they take action? What's going to get in their way? Why are they sharing this information or not sharing this information? When you start to think in that way and start to get to those truths, the sales conversation becomes actually pretty darn simple.
So what are some of the common things? Like, let's say someone's talking to a seller. Are there any common things that where a seller jumps off of the sales process that people can tighten up pretty quick?
Yeah, super quick. The biggest thing is setting expectations. Most investors know what they do. They know what the next step in every part of the process is. But most of them just don't share that with whoever they're trying to buy a house from. Whether it's an initial phone call and here's a great example. Lead comes in, right? So you produce a lead, online lead comes in, investor grabs it, picks up the phone, makes the call, and tries to set up an appointment. Well, most investors don't really lay the groundwork down as to what happens on that appointment. Yeah. So what the seller is feeling is, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you plan to do. I don't know if you plan to stay for a short time or a long time. I don't know if you're going to pressure me into doing something. So then that lead never gets converted, right? Yeah. So, one quick, simple thing to do is just at the end of that phone call, let's say lead conversion phone call, is just say, hey, listen, here's typically what the next step is. Here's how long it takes. I come out here, take a look at the property so I can give you the best possible offer for it. Last 30, 40 minutes, we'll chat about exactly what you're hoping for. I'll give you an offer down to the penny if you love it. we can, you know, figure out a next step. If anything's off or timing's not right, no sweat. You know, I don't buy every house that I look at. That's not the expectation, but at least we'll know we gave it our best shot. Mm. Now, that little tidbit right there will increase your lead to appointment conversion rate. Just relieving the fear of what's going to happen next.
Dude, and the way that you said it, like even when you were going through that example, like I felt at ease, and I'm not even like a seller. I'm just going, man, the tonality was a big deal. So tonality was a big deal, the way you said it, but also just the way that you kind of worded some of those things. Hey, I don't buy every house that I come and see, but at least I'll take my best shot and we'll know if it's going to work, kind of thing. Where, so then it at least shows that seller, hey, you aren't going to be pressured. I'm going to give you my best shot. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Like, you know, that's so cool. Dude, man, like I love psychology. I've studied psychology so much, and I love it because number one, when you start to learn these things, you can start to learn yourself when you are encountering people using it on you, whether it's for good or bad. But also, if you truly know that your solution is the best solution for that seller or that buyer or whatever, and you don't know how to connect with the seller in this way, and you end up not being able to help them, but they have this other person who's a negotiation master, but they don't have a good service, you just did your seller a massive disservice because you're not learning these skills in a big way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way you put it is beautiful. I mean, I think of it just like that. It's hey, if you're a doctor and a patient comes in to your office and they've got a serious issue that you can fix, mm-hmm. but you don't explain yourself good enough or ask the right questions or convey the importance of taking a medicine or doing a certain thing, you've not only failed yourself, but you failed this human being. Mm-hmm. And so many sellers who reach out have a real problem or something they're trying to accomplish. And if you're best at accomplishing that and you've got a killer service and you just failed to provide that service because you didn't put the work in or time in to have the right conversation, that's a massive failure on several different levels.
Oh, big time. And so you talked about setting expectations. I want to relay this to the online world too, where one thing that we've seen our really successful clients do that we've coached them on is setting the expectation on the website as well. So it's a continuous flow from website to phone call, and they just always know what the next step is. So you've got a good, hey, here's what the process looks like, or they fill out the form and become a lead. You have a video, hey, you know, hey, this is John with XYZ Home Buyers, and thank you for submitting your information. Now here's what we're going to be doing, and here's what you can expect. Like, that's so easy for someone to do, but most people aren't doing it, and it plays hand in hand with exactly what you're talking about. So let's say you get the appointment. You show up to the house. Is there anything from there that you guys have found are easy kind of switches that people can flip when they're speaking to sellers?
Yeah. So first of all, just repeat those expectations again, right off the bat. You could do it word for word. Doesn't even matter. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's how long it'll take. At the end of this, here's what will happen. If it's yes, that's cool. If it's no, that's okay too. Right. Set expectations, relieve pressure. So number one, that's what you do. You do that the first 30 seconds, the conversations that you have after that will change. Number two will be, I don't know how else to put it, but just shut up. I mean, I see a lot of good, really good salespeople and a lot of really bad salespeople. And you can tell who's good by how often people talk and when they talk what they say. So real quick, the best salespeople in the world in all industries, here's what they do. They talk maybe 10% of the time, and when they do open their mouths, it's with a question. So what does that mean? It means they're 100. The spotlight's on the seller 100% of the time, not on who you are, what you do, what your expertise is. It's not a show and tell. It's not a time for a salesperson to stroke their ego. It's a time to learn about how we can help these people. And when we have those conversations, if you do nothing more but say, you know what, I'm going to stop sharing about myself and just start asking, what's your situation? What do you accomplish? Where do you want to go? What brought this all on? How long have you been thinking about it? Those simple questions, you're going to figure out better than anyone else what it is they're trying to accomplish, why those things are important. And when you know those things, you can either craft an offer better than anyone else or explain your offer in comparison to their situation better than anyone else. And you can win deals not being the highest offer out there. It happens every single day.
Dude, so I want people to rewind that and then listen to it and rewind it and listen to it. And I'm definitely guilty of some of these things. I've gotten way better at it over the years, where I try to talk my way out of situations. Sometimes I should ask my way out of them. But what are some of those questions you mentioned, three of them there, but what are some of those questions that people should be asking a seller in this example when they're sitting
with them? We teach three different types of questions. There's a progression, and the progression is based on science. It's based on a company called Huthwaite did a sales study. It was, they studied, they basically took down word for word everything that happened in 35,000 sales calls over about 12 years. And they identified four types of questions, actually, that the best salespeople in the world, that all salespeople use, but identified three specifically that the top about 2-4% of salespeople use. And their problem questions are number one. Good salespeople use problem questions, which are just very broad, open questions that, that start to dig into what problem you're there to solve. Yep. You know, in your world, in real estate, that question can be, hey, I appreciate you, you know, picking up the phone and calling or filling out the web form or inviting me to your property. You know, I just gotta ask, you know, what prompted you to even do that? Or, hey, you got a beautiful house here. Why in the world are you thinking about selling? This is just kind of the doorway, right? A nice way to slide into the right conversation without having to guess and use a bunch of pointed questions. Just, hey, what were you hoping I could do for you? So that's a problem question. Those are a few examples of problem questions so you can start zeroing in on the problem.
Okay.
The next type of question salespeople should ask, this is what about the top 10% or so ask. They're called impact questions. So once you get a problem, in order to figure out if you got to figure out, is this problem compelling enough for them to take action, right? So an impact question is just like it sounds. What's the impact of the problem, right? Hey, so, you know, kind of wondering, you know, why you called me out here. Well, bills are a little tight. Well, when you say tight, what do you mean? Well, you know, I can't do this or I can't do that. Well, how long has that been going on? What else is that keeping you from? Is that a big deal or a little deal, right? And you find out if the problem is impacting them on any type of personal level, what they think about, what they stress about, what they do. Is the property impacting them physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually? Is it impacting loved ones around them? Anything like that. Impact is the reason why people will change. And the more you talk about impact, I mean, motivation is a big buzzword in this industry, right? But the more you talk about how a problem is impacting someone, motivation literally goes through the roof. The sense of urgency to take action goes through the roof. And the best way I know to explain that is this. The more you talk about the problem, the more you're in the moment, the more painful it is. So the more pain you feel, the more action you take. So think about it this way. If you've got just a little teeny tiny headache, do you do anything, right? Most people won't do anything. Oh, I got a little headache coming on. If it gets worse, I'll do something. If you've got a pounding headache, the worst headache you felt in your life, you almost can't even move. How far are you willing to go to get rid of it? Oh, you almost pay anything, do anything, right? So the more you talk about the impact of someone's problem, the more they're faced with it, motivation and the urgency to take action actually increases. And we can see this through functional MRI scans. And if you want to get really nerdy with it, with the neuroscience behind how decisions are made, it's really cool, interesting stuff. But when you talk about impact, that's what happens in the brain. You can see synapses firing and all kinds of stuff in the amygdala and the fear center of the brain. And I won't go any further with that because you can tell I get really carried away.
I love this kind of stuff, man. I love this kind of stuff.
So then the next piece with the really, really – I mean, that's good enough. That'll get you deals. But the really, really good salespeople pause then and they use what are called picture-perfect questions. And what that is their picture perfect scenario. So you go from problem, pain, you know, here's where I'm at right now. Here's what it feels like. It doesn't feel good. And then you switch the conversation to, well, if you get rid of this place, where would you go? Why there? What would that be like? And you start to get them to paint this really vivid picture on the other end of the spectrum about what's possible. And what happens is when somebody can see with vivid clarity where they are and what that feels like, where they can be and what that feels like, that's when you can really increase the motivation to start moving that way, to start taking action towards it. So that questioning strategy is how you take someone with even a little bit of motivation and you really turn it up. So most investors are just looking for those people who are already super motivated. They're bringing it to the table. The really, really good investors know how to take anyone with even a little bit of motivation and turn it up and really show people why it's important for them to take action for them.
Man, so I kind of want to break this down for people listening to this, because this is really, really good stuff, by the way, guys and gals. Take notes on this stuff, because basically what you've done there is you've set the expectations with the seller. So you're letting the guard down. There's not this mystery around it. In a competitive market, when there's a lot of different people in the market, one of those things that the sellers are looking for, or buyers, or it doesn't matter, but they're looking for, is how well do I understand this process? And any question marks they have, there's going to be guards up. And yeah. So like John was saying, you're going to be letting that guard down by making it insanely clear how the process works, and in a way to where you're not walking up to that house, you know, with the clipboard and just like all of a sudden doing all this stuff where it's 100% property focused. Guard down. Next, and this is a follow-up question I want to ask property versus person here in a second, but next is you're kind of getting them rooted in the today, right? It's like, here is the situation of today. I want to talk with you about this situation. That's the impact stuff, getting them rooted in that pain of today. And then next, it's getting them connected to the pleasure of the future when this gets solved. And so if you guys can kind of set expectation, get them rooted in the pain that they're feeling, get them talking about it, and then get them thinking about the pleasure that they can go towards when they solve this, using the things John laid out, you guys are going to be way ahead of the game. So question on people versus property. How much of the conversation would a really, really good investor who is really good at negotiation, how much of it would be talking about the person and their situation versus about the property?
Oh, man. The property, and this might sound outlandish, but almost nothing about the property. Mm-hmm. The property doesn't matter. Yep. Right. It's what am I here to do? The property is just, real estate's just a tool, right? Mm-hmm. The real conversation is, you're here. Why do you want to leave here? Where do you want to go? Okay, so you're here, where you're at. Here's your destination, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, how's a property fit into this? It's holding you back somehow, or it's impacting you in a way you don't like. So, all right, the question I have to ask you is, how do I take you from here and put you here? And I'm going to use real estate as a tool to do that. But all we're talking about is where you are versus where you want to be. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, a property is going to probably change hands, and there's different ways we'll structure our offer to get you from here to there the most efficient way possible, you know, in regards to your situation. But that's it. I mean, the property is almost nothing.
Dude, and that's where I see a lot of newer investors or ones who are struggling, is they lead with property stuff. And I wanted to point that out, because as I was listening to you talk through those three things, expectations, and then basically getting them seated in the now, the impact, and then the future, there wasn't any property talk in there. I'm like, I want people to recognize this. There was no property talk in there. Now, if you're talking with the seller, it might be slightly different, of course, because you're sitting there with the person. They're going to toss questions at you. But at the end of the day, that I think is a big difference. Is one person leads with, I'm going to talk about property, and then all of a sudden, what happens there? And let me toss this your way. So, what does a seller feel when someone comes in talking about impact and about their situation versus someone that comes in and is just asking property related questions? What does the seller feel there?
Yeah. So what's the seller feel? So I'll use an analogy to explain this. I think this is probably the easiest way to do it. Mm-hmm. So, Trevor, let me ask you this question. If you have a loved one and the loved one has some type of illness or in some medical condition, right? Mm-hmm. It's an illness or an injury, and it's serious, right? You want to do whatever you can to help this person out. Are you going to take that person to your general practitioner every day, you know, Band-Aids and boo-boos type of doctor, or are you going to take that person to a specialist?
Oh, a specialist, of course.
100%. What if the specialist is 2, 3, 4 times as much money as your, you know, the copay for your general practitioner? Does that matter?
Not in that case, because I don't think I'd get my problem solved, or there might even be more risk going at the GP.
Bingo. So you go to a specialist and you pay more because you feel they know more about your situation, more about that illness or injury better. They know it better than anyone else. And if they know it better, mm-hmm. they're better equipped to help you, and you'll pay more for that help. Mm. When you focus on someone's situation, they feel like you know them better than anyone else and are therefore better equipped to help them. Another way you can picture this is, you know, I've been to a ton of weddings in my life, and my wife loves to watch like those couple shows, you know, dating shows and all that kind of reality TV stuff. And whenever you hear people talking about, whether it's at a wedding or on TV, when they fell in love, I always hear this question, like, when'd you know? And the common answer I hear from both men and women, I mean, you'll hear too if you start paying attention to it, is they know me better than anyone else. And that's when I knew they were the one. So if that's just knowing someone's situation, taking the time to understand their situation is powerful enough for you to pay 2 or 5 or 10 times more to go see a specialist, or for you to devote the rest of your life to someone, do you think maybe you could buy a house, right? There's a lot of power in taking the time to understand someone, and a lot. And when someone feels truly understood, a lot of what they'll do for you and trust you with.
Dude, that's such a big deal, because what you're talking about is like you said, and this isn't just, and I want people to pick this up, that this isn't techniques so we can then, you know, take advantage of us. That's not that at all. It's number one, you need to know your stuff, and you need to know that you can actually help that seller. And keep on honing your craft so you can help them better than anyone, and be confident with that. But then go after it and use these techniques so you can actually help the seller. So someone else who isn't as good or isn't as caring as you doesn't swoop in there and do it, right? And when you look at it this way, it's like when you go out there helping the seller, like John said, they know that you care about them. When you go out there with the clipboard jotting down, well, this is broken, they're looking at you like a shark, the sharks are circling, you know. Here's this thing, and they're trying to pick it apart, and the sharks are circling, and oh boy, here comes this offer kind of thing. They don't care about me. They're looking at the property.
Yeah.
Big time. So what are some of the big falling off points, if any, that pop up? So let's say I went through and we communicated with the seller in that way. You know, we've started to build trust with them. We know their situation. We have them future-paced and thinking about where they want to go. And then now we're getting ready to present an offer. Is there any particular way we should do that to present an offer?
Yeah. So number one, the big place in between those two, the offer and that conversation, there's one big place that many people do fall off. So I want to touch on that real quick. Salespeople, acquisition agents, anybody, when we're trying to influence someone to do something or take an action, what we're really afraid of is everything that'll get in the way. Commonly known as objections in the sales world. I call them deal killers, because what they do, they kill deals. One of the biggest problems salespeople have, a big falling off point, is they skip over everything that they know has potential to kill the deal. And they just imagine, well, maybe if I don't talk about it, they're going to forget about it, right? But, you know, are there family members who are involved in the decision or who will influence the decision? What are you scared of, right? What's the risk or the discomfort that goes along with selling a property to me or to anybody else, or with our process in particular? All those types of things. Are you scared of leaving money on the table? Failing to bring up stuff that could kill a deal is what ultimately ends up killing the deal. If we can bring it up, we can usually talk through it, or at least we know if we do fail exactly where our failure point was. And that'll help us in the future. We can learn, you know, with our marketing, different things, how to use that. But most amateur salespeople avoid that stuff. Like, hey, if I don't bring up that they could list it with the realtor, that they won't know they can list it with the realtor, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's insane. Yeah. But if you bring it up, you can then deal with it. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see a lot of people fall off, is they know that there's 3 or 4 things that can get in the way of a deal, but they just sweep it under the rug and fail to address it as if it's going to disappear. What happens is it doesn't disappear. Mm-hmm. And because that wasn't talked through, it's still an open checkbox, if you will. You end up with I got to think about it, some form of maybe or think it over, and then you're done.
Dude, it's so funny. I've got a good friend, name is Ben Settle. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of Ben Settle, but he's a copywriter, email copywriter guy, and amazing. You know, he's a funny dude and also just a character. And I had him on probably episode 15 or so. I mean, not that number. If anyone's listening, it's not episode 15. It's within the first 25 episodes. But one thing that he talked about on that podcast, and we've talked about a lot in person too, is a very similar concept. And I love the analogy he used to explain that. And he said he learned it from one of his big copywriter trainers, mentors back in the day, like one of the ones that we've all heard of. And he basically said, it's the exact same thing John said, wrapped into this analogy. He said, most businesses have these skeletons in the closet, these things that we think that when someone finds them, it's going to scare the prospect or the customer away. So what do most businesses do? They try to hide that skeleton in the closet, hope someone doesn't open up and find it. And the problem is, when someone does open up and find it, it actually works against you in a massive way, because number one, like John said, they're already thinking some of these things anyway, possibly, maybe not all of them, but they might already be thinking them. And number two, if they find it, if they discover it, all of a sudden they go, why didn't you tell me this? So you start to lose trust. So it's not just a, let's address the objection. It's also, man, you don't want them to find it, because it will lose, you'll lose trust if they find it and you don't bring it up. And yeah, he said, man, what you need to do as a business is not just like, you know, show the skeleton. He said, the best marketers, the best businesses, they open up that closet, they take the skeletons out, and they make them dance. And he goes, you got to make those skeletons dance. And what that means for him is take the skeletons and make them a selling point. Make it a positive. You take it, those four skeletons, like John was saying, how can you turn them around so it's actually in their benefit? Well, you know, this is my offer, and yeah, it might be a little bit lower than this guy's, but I close on every single offer that I make. I've never not closed on one before. You can guarantee that I am the cash buyer. I'm not going to pass off to this, this, that, and the other. Like, whatever it is, there's a benefit in there. Make that skeleton dance, man. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What we do is we make them discover their own benefits. Mm. When they discover the benefit on their own instead of us telling, it's more powerful, right? Because anything they discover is the truth. Anything a salesperson tells them is probably a lie. So, you know, for a common one is a realtor. Mm. We'll say, hey, have you thought about listening with the realtor? You know, that's the most common way to sell a house. Is, yeah, I've done it. I'm thinking about it. And I'll push them that way and say, you know, it might be in your best interest to list the place. Mm. I mean, if you really want to get every single penny out of this place and you don't mind, you know, waiting 30, 60, 90, 120 days to sell it and, you know, paying the fees and, you know, maybe putting 10 or 20 grand into this place to spruce it up to get top dollar out of it. Mm. That's what I would do with it. That's how you're going to get top dollar. And we start to push them that way. And then they push back and say, I don't want to spend the money on it. Mm. I don't want to wait 4 months. I don't want people traipsing through my house. Okay, fine. Right. Yeah. And then now that's checkbox out real. They decided for themselves, I don't want to sell to a realtor. And they told themselves why. Now we can move on to the next objection, the next skeleton in the closet, as you put it.
Dude, that is gold right there, man. Like, that is so good. Oh, man. Same thing, guys. Rewind that part right there, because the way that John brought up that objection is different than probably 9.5 out of 10 investors are doing it. You know, they're probably doing it to where they've got the piece of paper up and they're working the calculation and going, here's selling to me, or here's going with an agent, and they're giving them the comparison for them and showing them the fees and all that. Dude, the way you brought it up, I love it. Everyone please reverse that and then and emulate that, because that's not just a technique, that's a mindset. That's a mindset. And how do I take these skeletons or these detractors and then present them in a way so, like you said, that the seller can then discover them themselves. Dude, that's masterful right there. I love it. Are there any other types of things that pop up at this point before you're presenting the offer?
You know, just like I said, risk, discomfort, mm-hmm. relationships, anyone that is going to influence a decision in some way, those are the biggies.
Okay. And then what about presenting the offer? Is there anything special there that people should do that's currently throwing them off likely?
Yeah, the offer is the easiest piece. Mm-hmm. When you get to an offer, the selling's done. The hard part is done. You've either won the deal or lost the deal at this point. What the offer is all you're doing is regurgitating how your offer fits their situation. So a good offer sounds like this. Hey, Mr. or Mrs. Seller, you know, you told me that you've been really worried about bills and things have been piling up on you and you can't really get rid of the place because you can't afford to fix it up and sell it. So the way I'm structuring my offer, it's all going to be related to them. So the way I'm structuring my offer is I'm going to buy as is as quickly as possible. So you don't have to put a dime towards it. You don't have to do a thing about it. But you also said you don't know where you're going to go. And even though you want your money as quick as possible to pay off some bills and things like that, it's a little bit scary. I'm bringing up a deal killer. It's a little bit scary not knowing where you're going to go. And if you sell too fast, are you going to be without a place? You know, and if you sell too slow, are you paying for two places? So here's what I'm going to do. The way I'm going to structure this deal is I'm going to close within 14 days, as quick as 14 days, in case you find a place fast and you want to get out and get your money as quick as possible. But I'll do it within 45 days. So if it takes you some time, you don't have to stress about where you're going to go and how you're going to do it. We'll just close when you're ready. So that way you have the money as quick as possible without feeling rushed or pushed. Now, on top of that, you know, you were a little worried about how am I going to go and actually pull off the move. It's going to be expensive. You got a lot of stuff. You got 20 years worth of stuff in here. So what we're going to do is before title, once title is clear, I'm going to give you $750. So you can go ahead without and just remove that worry from the table. You can pay for a moving service. Just have them pack up, put a piece of tape, put a marker, put a sticker on anything you want to keep, have them pack it up. And you know what? Everything else, don't even worry about it. If you just leave it here, I'm going to have a crew come in and we'll donate the stuff that's donatable. I know you don't want anything going to waste, and the trash will take care of that for you too. So what you do is you just regurgitate all of the motivation they gave you and how your offer fits that motivation, helps them get there. And then all the deal killers that we just talked about that you bring up, how you're also uniquely qualified to deal with those deal killers. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's the same offer everybody else gives. I'm going to cut you a check, and there's a couple bells and whistles that if you need, we'll do it. Yep. But when you explain it that way in their terms based on their exact situation, they walk away feeling like this is a custom offer just for me. Nobody can do a better job than this person. Mm.
And also shows you care. I mean, there's like two or three things within that that you genuinely care about that client. I mean, you care that you're not going to boot them out of the house before they're ready within that 45 days and they've got a place to go. And you care enough to say, hey, you know what? I could pocket the $750 and make a little extra money, but instead it's something I'm going to pass back over to you so you have some cash to move. Man, and that right there, I want everyone to listen to this really, really closely is if you look at the core values here at Carrot, or, you know, I know John and I have very similar core values just from chatting briefly down in Dallas and just following you a little bit. And I'm going, man, that right there is what I want our clients to do when they're doing business. I want you to do business right. I want you to make the real estate investment industry proud. You know, I want it to be to where a wave of investors and agents come through and all of a sudden, you know, you're not now one of the bottom, you know, the top least trusted industries. There's like legal and real estate is right there in the top two or three in all these surveys that get ran every year. And it's because people do things opposite of the way that John's showing. They do things in a way that comes across as I am trying to take advantage of you, or even worse is I don't know what the process is like. I feel like I don't understand everything. So therefore my mind's going to jump to conclusions that I'm being taken advantage of. And gosh, guys and gals, just please listen to this because this isn't just about closing the deal. It's about doing business right. It's about doing business right. And it's also about just really uplifting this industry and being part of that uplift, which is awesome, man. So are there any missing tidbits in here? Just little quick tips that might kind of fill in some spots or after you present the offers or anything else?
You know, the next biggest thing that you can get some massive traction with if you just implement this one little thing is the worst way a sales call can end is with a maybe or think it over. Nothing good comes from that. You don't gain any information. You don't know what the next steps are. If there's hidden, you know, deal killers someone's worried about, you didn't uncover those, you failed as a salesperson. So every sales call needs to end with a clear yes and or a clear no. So our rule is anything other than a yes, anything. I don't care what it sounds like. If it's not a yes, it's a no. And if you adopt that philosophy, and you give the no to the seller if it's not a yes in a very nurturing way, you will win a ton more deals for two reasons. Number one, some people just need that push over the edge. Not a bad push, not a pressure sign this now push, but hey, look, we just talked about everything you want to accomplish. If, you know, after an hour talking about where you are and where you want to be and how we could help you, if you're not 100% confident that this is the way to go, we need to call this what it is. It's just something's not right about it. Timing or something else isn't right. And that's perfectly okay. But we do need to call it what it is. And that little tidbit right there doesn't pressure for yes. Giving the no in a very nurturing way will either just tip them over the edge, go, no, I need to get this solved. Let's do it. Or if there's still something hidden, something they're worried about holding them back, you'll hear well, it's just that. And then bang, we can deal with it and bring the sales call to fruition. Again, yes or no. So adopting the philosophy that yes or no and no's okay. There's no other way to end that conversation. That alone will win you more deals, guaranteed.
In that right there, I know in Dallas, you brought up a similar scenario like that. And a lot of people would call it a takeaway sale, right? Where you're kind of going, okay, well, let me back it up a little bit and kind of take it off the table. Some people I know are way aggressive in the takeaway. And same thing, like the reason I want to bring John on here is because the way that he does things is very in line with the way that we like to do things. And also it works insanely, insanely well. So it wasn't an aggressive takeaway. It was a takeaway, but showed the care still, but elicited the exact same response or even better response than a takeaway the way a lot of people do it. That's awesome, man. Well, dude, man, we've been on here about 50 minutes, and I know my head's spinning with certain things. I'm going, geez, like there's just so many good nuggets in here that people can take away, and myself too, because like I said, this isn't just real estate. This is how do you take these concepts that John has laid out and apply them in your life? It could be in real estate. It could be in your day job. It could be whatever it is. You're going for a job interview. There's certain things in here that can be applied there. John, where can people find out about you? I'm on your website right now, MidwestRev.com. Is that where should people find out about you? Is that
that's the best place? MidwestRev.com. We've got free trainings and different things on there. A 21-day free sales challenge where we drip out a video every day of a little nugget you can use. All kinds of stuff like that. So I think we've got even a free sales management training for investors who are upper level, who are now running a sales team. How do we hold them accountable and coach them to higher levels and that stuff? All free on there.
And then next, dude, I know you hold boot camps and some other things. If people are listening to this and going, man, that was like just in this 40 minutes, that was really good. And I can only imagine if I got all the scripts and all the training and really one-on-one or in a group setting with John and other people, like, do you have anything like that that people can plug into if they want to take the next step?
Yeah, we do an online training that we plug people into all year long. And then we also do two or three boot camps a year. We're doing one here soon in April of 2018. And then we've got we'll do another one. It's not scheduled yet for the fall. And something really cool we're doing with this next one is Mike's Mastermind Investor Fuel that we're both in. For the business owners that go to this next boot camp, he is going to, at no charge, allow them into the Mastermind experience for one session, which is usually super expensive, but it's powerful. It's super cool. It really just changes the way you think. So we're really excited about that.
Dude, that's cool. And I know we've had a lot of our customers go through your training. A couple of men in the Mastermind that we're in together, Luke Petroza and Brandon Barnes, were at the event with you right before the Mastermind. And they were just saying amazing things about it, man. They actually use the words life-changing. So if you guys think that a sales boot camp is boring sales stuff is exciting to me, like, because it's the psychology. But truly, if you do it right, this is life-changing stuff. It's stuff that you leverage in every single part of your life. And that's the reason I want to bring on John onto this, because he is the best in the real estate industry at doing this. And man, you really laid out some amazingly actionable stuff, and just so proud and happy to have you on the Caracast.
I'm pumped to be here.
Awesome, buddy. Well, everyone, have an amazing rest of the week, and please go check out MidwestRev.com. That's MidwestRev.com, and engage in John's stuff. You can probably find him on social media, but he probably won't answer you back anytime soon. He's going on a social media diet here shortly, or he will. It'll be with video, though, and his executive assistant's going to be helping.
I love it. I'll still be there.
Cool. I love it, man. Well, I appreciate you, everyone. Go out there and take action on something here. I always say that, but the main difference, or one of the key differences anyway, that I find with people who are where they want to be versus who aren't, is the people who aren't where they want to be don't actually take action on the things that they learn and they need to. So if it's even one part of this that you go and adjust the way that you're talking to a seller, awesome, go do that. And then hone that in, and then add the second part later, and go to MidwestRev.com and engage in kind of the masterclass stuff on it. So, John, appreciate you, man. Have a good rest of the week, dude.
You too.